We're enjoying Justin Robert Young sharing some of his research for the upcoming Action News card game with us.
Yeah, we are. I'm chock full of factoids right now, and I'm just no matter where I go, there's a few shaking loose.
For 1975, you got to do Spanish dictator Francisco Franco is still dead. Generalissimo.
We've really had.
Because then you can tie in the SNL pop culture part of it.
Oh, we do have that in 75.
Wow.
SNL.
UK maybe. Inflation jumped 25% in 1975. I forgot how bad it was back then. Wow.
It was pretty bad. I remember my my social studies teacher used to complain all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I remember how it was in the 70s.
And the 75 is when the Vietnam War ended. I didn't realize it was that. I thought it was more like 74, but I guess we left in 73. So
74 was when everything was signed, wasn't it?
73 is like, when the U.S. left, right? And then 75 is when the North conquered the South.
Yes. 75, I think, is when South Vietnam stopped existing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All right.
Oh, God. So loud. Sorry.
Jesus Christ. Sorry about that.
Oh, Anchor did a cool little animation for my headline segment on the Snap TV stuff.
The Wall Street Journal reports Snap Inc.
Nice. Nice. You know what? I'm going to get some water because I know I'm going to need it. Be right back. Keep the folks entertained. It's okay, Ray. I'll be fine. Oh. Ray's looking at me like, what kind of weird barking was that? What else we got? Ooh, an algorithm from Cambridge consultants can identify musical styles better than humans. Researchers tested the AI by having a pianist play a variety of music, Baroque, classical, ragtime, jazz, etc., in a live demonstration. The AI then assessed the likely genre in real time, vastly outperforming conventional software hand-coded by humans. Oh. That's not as impressive. Its algorithm could lead to more sophisticated methods of organizing and searching music databases. Could be an important advancement in the medical industry. Used to quickly evaluate a patient's health using sensor waveforms. It's a big advance, but it's not as big as I... It's not better than humans. That's a misleading headline. It's better than human-made software. Because since humans decide what genre it is, I was skeptical how they could outperform humans. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What if the humans disagree what genre it is?
As that's pop country, and some people say it's pop.
It's a little bit country. It's a little bit rock and roll.
It's a little bit Marie and Donny Osmond. They were kind of like the Jackson 5, except they kind of whittled it down to the brother and sister. instead of just the one brother. And then Will went to a sister, and then the less successful brother and the less successful sister.
Now, Roger, I know you're not going to be able to see it tonight, and I don't mean to rub your face in it when I say this, but I'm curious if Justin is going to see Guardians tonight.
I will. I'll be at the Alamo Draft House, San Francisco.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll be at Century City.
I'll be at home watching my family and possibly cooking dinner.
I'll just cam it for you.
Yeah. No. To make it authentic, you need to make sure the camera is off center.
Yeah.
That only 3/4 of the screen is seen.
Exactly.
And then occasionally someone will get up from their seat in the middle of the movie to use a bathroom or get more popcorn. People used to pay money for that. Like, ooh, see before it's in the theater. So it's like, you're going to go blind.
Ah, the days before BitTorrent. I kid, of course, about camming it. I will not do that, RIA. Do not send your goons after me.
What if they really did have goons?
Oh, like, they do. Well, it'd be the MPAA in this case, not RIA.
It would be a shame if something were to happen to your automobile.
Patrick Beja saw it last week because it came out in France early, and he said it was too funny.
Too funny.
Too many jokes.
I think he's. Oh, not, I mean, that's not fair. I think he said it was try too hard to be a comedy.
Like, exactly.
Every scene needed to have its laughable moment in it.
Trying too hard is the key phrase there.
Smacks of effort, man. speaking of,
I've got to finish a short story. So I have a book in the can that's about a generation ship that's had problems, and it's sort of devolved in part because they can't support the travel on this huge ship that they would need to keep everybody in communication. And I've got a prequel short story that I'm writing for an anthology. I'm pretty excited about.
Nice.
Cool. So wait, you're working on two stories.
Well, the book is kind of done. I'm just waiting for an editor to finish up on it. And then I have to decide what I want to do with it. The short story I have to turn in by May 1st. So I'm late. But I promised them I would get it in by May 8th. I woke up in the middle of the night.
Thank you, Tom, for taking the German newspaper.
Yes, you're welcome. I swapped that out. I'm not saying I will handle it well, but I'm willing to take the hit. Süddeutsche Zeitung. Oh, that's actually easier than I thought because it's South German news. Yeah. Okay. Actually, I feel much better about it now. I mean, I still won't say it in a good German pronunciation, but at least
say
I know
it angry. It's... Get angry when you say it.
Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, no, that wasn't right. Apologies to my German brethren.
I'm going to make sure these birds are good.
The brown
birds?
There actually is a German Mennonite group in the Central Valley. What are they called? The Braun? They're the Brotherhood, but it's whatever it is in German.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
But it used to be weird because they would have their gatherings on Friday. Mm-hmm. And now I have to drive out to my friend's grandfather's house because that's where he's staying, and he's German Baptist. And you just see a bunch of people look like Amish. It'd be like, you know, the outfits are slightly different because they're loud buttons and stuff like the Amish aren't.
Buttons?
No, they had buttons. They had like things.
Oh, they are allowed. You said okay. Yeah. I misheard. I thought you meant they were loud, like really colorful and plaid.
Oh no! Well, like the women's outfits can have patterns in them that in the way that the Amish
okay.
Get.
I gotcha.
But very similar if you're not looking too closely, And yeah, one time they were just all standing outside at a church, and it totally felt like a scene out of Witness.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, what? It's like, oh, that's right. It's Friday.
Was Witness out at that time?
No, Witness is out like 12 years prior to that. Or no, 10 years prior to that.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
So it's just like what?
Waymo has no smoking gun. You mean a gun that can stop smoking? Oh, Activision has its earnings. $1.88 per share, up from $1.85. Adjusted revenue of $6.33 billion, up from $6.30 billion. Analysts had expected less. Overwatch drove all the results. Good. It was good. Positive. Call of Duty, and Overwatch made them money.
Call of Duty. It's coming back with Call of Duty, back to the WW2 roots. See how well that works out for them. After touching the future, they decided to go back to the past. Why don't they do Call of Duty like Byzantine or Mesopotamian or Egyptian period, running around in the chariot? Lobbing spears.
Running around on a chariot lobbing spears.
So sound like a...
Is Britney's uncle.
What? you were giving me crap.
I know, yesterday. I know. It was you yesterday, it's me today.
I made sure I had a kale shake before.
The tables have turned. All right. You ready to do this, sir, Mr. Young?
Let's do this.
Control. Screen.
There you go. Control cool. is yours.
All right.
Control is yours, Mr. Chang. Here we go.
The Daily Tech News Show is brought to you by listeners just like me and you, not outside organizations. To find out how you can contribute, visit dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for May the 4th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. May the 4th be with you, Justin Robert Young.
I don't get it, but it's great to be here, Tom. And I'm very, very excited to bring everybody yet another full buffet of tech news.
Yes, we have stocked all of the chafing dishes filled to the brim with quantum computing and SMS vulnerabilities. And even an altruistic story, our main topic today, about a man who struggled with the right thing to do morally with some source code he came across.
A modern morality tale.
Yeah.
In every facet.
Well, let's start with a few tech things you should know about. Researchers at the University of Science and Technology of China at Hefei describe building a specialized quantum computer to model the movement of photons at a rate 24,000 times faster than a conventional computer. They can't do as many photons as a conventional one yet, but they're getting there.
Awesome. U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup said he does not see any smoking gun that Uber conspired with Anthony Lewandowski to steal trade secrets from Waymo, and said that he is considering whether to send Waymo's claims to arbitration. Waymo, of course, was formerly known as Google's self-driving car initiative.
I feel like Judge Alsup is just tired of all of them. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go deliberate on this with myself. Get out of my courtroom.
Get out of here.
Sprint is making an LTE signal booster called the Magic Box, available to qualifying customers for free. They're going to start with businesses, but it will come to consumers eventually. The Magic Box has a dedicated cellular channel rather than using a customer's home broadband.
Yeah, they've got the Magic Box. If you can call once, you can call twice.
Thanks. Now, here are some more top stories. Last month, Imagination Technologies announced it would lose business from Apple over the next 2 years as Apple brings GPU manufacturing for mobile devices in-house. That's not the news today. If you're like, wait a minute, you already told me that. We told you that last month. Thursday, Imagination announced it will sell its embedded processor business and its mobile and Internet of Things patent licensing arm. That's step one to dealing with all of this business loss. Step two, Imagination is beginning a formal dispute resolution procedure in the hopes of convincing Apple to license some of its graphics patents. They've been negotiating behind the scenes, and Apple keeps telling them, no, we don't need your license. We can design our graphics processors without your patents. Imagination finds that hard to believe. They also find it hard to believe that Apple is taking away 60% of their revenue, which is what Apple accounted for last year. Side note to this, Bloomberg reports Qualcomm may bearing its dispute with Apple over licensing. Qualcomm is apparently not licensing its modem technology on fair terms, according to Apple. They're in various lawsuits about that. Qualcomm might go to the U.S. International Trade Commission. And when you go to the ITC, you generally ask for a ban. So they may ask for a ban on imports of iPhones, and all the iPhones are made overseas, so it'd be a ban on new iPhones coming in the U.S. Usually those bans don't last. They end up causing people to settle if the ITC issues them. But here we go. Apple in licensing, it's not licensing hell, but it's fighting several licensing battles on multiple fronts.
And this is really the strong suit from his background of CEO Tim Cook. He was the supply chain guy that understood these deals, not only in terms of where they need to license, but also the best financial relationships that they could have to get these parts together and into the United States. But at the same time, when you are Apple and you have a hard-nosed strategy when it comes to negotiating these kinds of deals and the kind of cash on hand that could buy and sell most hemispheres.
Yes, many GDPs do not equal the amount of cash Apple has on hand.
Then these companies, really, even gigantic companies like Qualcomm, is no shrinking violet. I mean, imagination obviously is something that's going to be affected greatly by Apple going elsewhere, or in house. But Qualcomm's a gigantic company. What do they have to lose? Other than to play hardball with Apple, and you know, at this point, going to a governing commission that could ban all new iPhone imports is effectively the all right. Let's see who blinks first move.
Oh yeah, no, the Qualcomm plays hardball too. Witness our discussion from last week where we talked about the reason that Google has to drop support for Android faster than anyone would like is in part due to the fact that Qualcomm just doesn't want to do the drivers after 18 months. For its older hardware, and they have that power. So you've got the hardball playing scrappy 27 Yankees in the Apple team, but you've also got Ty Cobb's Detroit Tigers for Qualcomm.
These are the kind of metaphors that you could only get here on Daily Tech News Show. Do you think that this matters ultimately?
No.
iPhones are getting banned. No iPhones are getting banned, right?
Yeah, like, ITC reports, if you haven't heard of them before, go back into the mid-2000s they're going to ban Nokias from coming in, right? Usually what happens is if the ITC issues a ban, it doesn't take place immediately. And it often only applies to older models of things, sometimes things that aren't even really shipping anymore, just because of the nature of the way patents work. And it's almost always just used as leverage to get a negotiation done. So this is Qualcomm just raising its game and trying to call Apple's bluff. I don't think it's going to affect us. I don't think it's going to stop iPhones from being sold in the United States. The imagination thing, that's just a last-ditch effort, right? You know, that's a Hail Mary pass because I know I was doing baseball metaphors, but I'm switching to football, okay? Just deal with it. Imagination is like we're going out of business if we don't come up with revenue. So sell what we can sell and put as much pressure on Apple as we can afford to try to get some money out of them.
Because otherwise their only recourse is to look at what Apple does after that and try to find some kind of a proof that they are using the technology that they had contracted with
and
them.
That's even more expense, you know, because then you get into protracted court battles. And as you mentioned, Apple doesn't fold in these things.
No, and they have no reason to, and they have all the money to pay the lawyers forever. Meanwhile, in Apple news, in an interview with CNBC's Jim Cramer, Apple CEO Tim Cook announced that the company will start a $1 billion fund to promote advanced U.S. manufacturing.
They're like, we were going to buy Qualcomm with that money, but instead, we'll do this.
Yeah, just because they're being such weenies, we're just going to spend it on whatever. That's editorial. Apple is in talks with a firm to invest in, although Cook did not say who. Cook also said Apple plans to fund programs that teach people to code. Apple bringing manufacturing to the United States and transitioning the workforce into coders.
Yeah.
Right, Tom?
They are doing what they can to try to change that conversation about the $216 billion that they've got in cash, mostly stored overseas. They're not going to repatriate that. They just aren't. They've said as much. But what they don't want to be seen as is not supporting U.S. industry at a time when there's a lot of nationalist sentiment about that. So throwing $1 billion out there, even though it's 1/216th of your cash on hand, sounds big. And it sounds like it could bring jobs. I'm very curious what this actually ends up meaning.
$1 billion is a lot of money for a lot of people and a lot of companies. Apple is not one of those companies. $1 billion is something that they can allocate over several years and not miss as a remainder of rounding error for some of their core businesses. Without getting into the nitty-gritty, and I don't mean this to be necessarily specifically a commentary on our modern political times, but politicians love press releases. This seems like the kind of press release that Apple can put out there, not physically, but in sentiment, can put out there, and a lot of politicians can get up and say, look
what we made them do.
Company doing thing in America.
Yeah. Exactly. Motherboard reports the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung reports that attackers used flaws in the text messaging system to steal money from banks. So an SMS vulnerability led to a bank robbery, not a stick-em-up bank robbery. You know, they just siphoned out funds. Essentially, the attacks used a vulnerability in the Signaling System 7, or SS7. You may hear that talked about quite a bit. SS7 is a standard for exchanging information. So when you're on a moving object, like a train or in a car, it's SS7 is part of the reason that you can keep your voice call going. If you want to send a text message from one country to another, SS7 is used, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For years, security researchers, including most prominently Carsten Knoll, or someone who calls themselves Carsten Knoll, have demonstrated how easy it is to hijack that process. The majority of the time, people don't verify who is requesting access. So someone can pay around 1,000 euros, purchase access to the SS7, and all they need is your phone number. If they can match your phone number to an account, then they can hijack anything you're using two-factor authentication for. So granted, they have to know your phone number. They have to have also cracked your password on a bank account. But even then, if you have two-factor authentication that uses SMS, they can use this system to get your second factor and log into your account. And that's exactly what they did. Now, this is not an easy thing to do. Not everybody's going to be able to do this. But folks who, you know, want to go after some money can put in the time and effort and find enough accounts that have easily crackable passwords and then hijack SMS and basically make two-factor authentication in those cases irrelevant. So last year, the National Institute of Standards and Technology said it was no longer recommending solutions that used SMS. Companies should move to authenticator apps at the very least. Something like the Google Authenticator or Authy or something like that. And even better is YubiKeys or physical keys and something like that. But one thing I want to make clear, Justin, is if you have two-factor authentication on, or if you were thinking about turning two-factor authentication on, you still should.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is putting in speed bumps. And if you have a strong password and two-factor authentication, even with this, you make it harder for them to get into your account.
Sure.
But it does show that SMS-based two-factor authentication, certainly not foolproof.
And despite the fact that two-factor is thought to be, and is, like you pointed out, a better way to go, it is always good for everybody, and not the smart people that listen to this show, but if you can proselytize amongst your friends and family that no security is foolproof security, and there's a reason why you want to keep an eye on stuff like this so you can react accordingly as things are made vulnerable and hacked. So this is a troubling story. It is certainly something that that we in the know should keep our finger on. But at the same time, I almost find these stories to be good because the more these are out in the wild, the more we can start to continue to understand and think we are not nearly as secure as we think we are. And there is always a need for continued technology. Yeah.
Sadly, you need stuff like this to force hands and force people to upgrade security. SS7 can be secured, theoretically. You can verify that the right device is actually contacting you, but carriers just don't, because sort of the prevailing opinion, I don't think anybody said this outright, but the prevailing opinion is, this is so hard to do, and it's never happened in real life. It's only happened to demonstrations. Why bother? Well, now some people have had their bank accounts drained. Now it's time to bother.
Well put. Facebook announced it's launching its express Wi-Fi service in India. Bharti Airtel joined several other regional providers providing service. Express Wi-Fi lets local business resell internet access to their customers. Express Wi-Fi is up and running in Kenya and in a trial phase in Tanzania, Nigeria, and Indonesia.
This is pretty interesting. This is part of Facebook's internet org effort to spread internet connections. And they had some major missteps in India when they tried to bring their free basics, which is also very popular in Africa, in parts of Africa. But in India, it was seen as zero rating and violating net neutrality, and it fell apart. So this is a different effort to spread internet connectivity. And the way it works is companies, local businesses, you know, like a convenience store or a restaurant, will sign up for this and then offer it either free to paying customers or at low cost, so that folks can get internet access at their places of business. You're talking about 20,000 spots going in with Bharti Airtel, so this is something fairly widespread, and it's way more acceptable to the Indian populace.
And it also continues to build a backbone for internet based on the economic motivation for shopkeepers and people, you know, who own places where people would gather and would enjoy internet, a place to put it. You know, a lot of times what makes, especially in developing countries, what makes technology that can better society stick is finding the people that will implement it. And a lot of times that is like what we're looking at here. If you can convince all the shopkeepers in a town to provide, you know, buy these boxes and provide, you know, basically just something they can turn on and collect money, then you're going to have more of these boxes out there and more people are going to have internet. The world is going to be a better place. So I do agree. This is a smarter way to do it.
Stoic Squirrel asks, is this real internet, not just Facebook access? Yes, this is actual internet. This is just a Facebook provided program, but it brings you the internet unmodified in any way that it is otherwise unmodified in the country. I don't know if India has certain blocks or things in place, but it's not Facebook limiting it. Wall Street Journal reports that Snap Inc. has signed deals with NBC Universal, Turner, Discovery, ESPN, Vice Media, and Scripps Networks, as well as the NFL, to produce original video shows for Snap TV. These are around 5-minute shows, but Snap wants original stuff, scripted dramas, news, animation, others like that. NBC's The Voice recently did a version of this. They ran a parallel singing competition. So you have The Voice singing competition on regular TV, and then they had a second competition going on Snapchat, and the winner of the Snapchat version of the show got to go on the main television show, but it was original, right? It wasn't just a promo. Snapchat will give content providers 70% of the revenue if the content provider is selling the ads, or they split it 50-50 if they have Snap doing the selling, but otherwise they don't pay to get the stuff in there.
Well, this is kind of the defining story of the last 2 years, and I'm going to go ahead and predict at least another couple of years past this. All of the ad money is in video. That's where you can get the highest CPM. The difference here is it appears that Snapchat isn't shelling out cash to get people to do it in a way that previous new media companies like Facebook and Twitter did. This is them just saying, hey, look, money's out there. We got the platform, so sign exclusive deals with us to produce certain shows, and then either you have your ad department go ahead and sell it, or we have our ad department go ahead and sell it, because it's in everybody's best interest to continue to fill in for ad money. Because if you look at some of the people that are on this list, like NBC, Turner, Discovery, ESPN, they are all heavily affected by the degradation of cable right now. And they are looking for any lifeline to start filling in those balance sheet holes.
And I know that these networks had to decide, is this right for us? Is a 5 minute limit, you know, roughly something that's going to work with our content? Is our audience even there? I know some brands were approached to look at this and said, "Eh, people are too old. They're not even there. We're not going to do it." So it is interesting to see who is signing up for this. Vice being the only one that's sort of a modern company, at least in this list.
Yeah. But everybody here produces something that appeals to the youth or has licenses to appeal to something that is there for the young folks.
Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, you got to check out our sister show. You can subscribe it as a podcast, dailytechheadlines.com, just around 5 minutes. You can get it on the Anchor app. If you haven't tried out the Anchor app, you got to try that. Justin Robert Young has some stuff on there, too. All kinds of stuff. Annie Gauss has stuff on there. There's good things happening at Anchor. Or you can get it on your Amazon Echo as a flash briefing. But Daily Tech Headlines, check it out. And that's a look at our top stories. All right. Reddit user Chemist49 bought a box of Blizzard stuff on eBay, as you do. I did this with Star Wars toys years ago. I just want a box of stuff, you know. I'm a Blizzard fan, I would assume, is what he said to himself. He said, Chemist49, you are a Blizzard fan. Buy this box of stuff on eBay. Well, when he got the box, in the box was a CDR labeled StarCraft Gold Master Source Code. It's the source code that makes all the difference. If this was just a Gold Master of the game that he could play, it would be of interest. But sure. It's the source code, right?
Ah.
That makes all the difference. He posted on Reddit, as you do when you face a moral quandary, asking what to do. Eventually, Blizzard contacted him, saying that the disc contained intellectual property and trade secrets being the open, or not open, the source code, and Blizzard would like it back. So he sought some legal advice, decided to return the disc to Blizzard. Blizzard gave him a copy of Overwatch and $250 in Blizzard store credit, and he thought that was it. He's like, oh, it was nice of them to give me some stuff. Well, last night, Chemist49 posted on Reddit that someone from Blizzard called him, offering to pay all his expenses to come to BlizzCon and take him out to drinks, and they mailed him a giant box of Overwatch and Diablo peripherals and swag and stuff like that. So Blizzard being very thankful to this person who, in their opinion, you know, if I'm Blizzard, I think he did the right thing.
So let's tackle this from a little bit before the story timeline, right? Let's say that this is me and you, okay. Right?
We are Chemist49.
We are Chemist49, and together we're living as roommates somewhere. We decide we're
you're Chemist. I'm 49. We're always together.
All right, now it's. Such power through. We have a box each of Blizzard stuff on eBay. It comes, and now we have this Gold Master source code for StarCraft.
Yeah.
Now I have the worst of intentions. You have the best of intentions. Let's dwell on mine. Let's say that Chemist49 wanted to be as malicious as possible with this, or maybe as profiteering as possible with this. What is reasonable that he could do? Like what if he wanted to be as destructive as possible?
Oh, well, okay. I got two different answers for you, depending on where you're going. Because sure. To be as destructive as possible, he doesn't tell anybody that he has this thing. And he goes and takes that source code and he puts it up on Pastebin and anywhere else that it can leak out. And just starts telling people as often as possible under assumed names in chats and various posts, like, check this out. Can you believe it? Somebody has the source code to StarCraft.
Yeah.
That's probably the most destructive to Blizzard. And it's destructive because Blizzard doesn't want people to know how they coded StarCraft. There's some security concerns there too, but honestly, if you intentionally open your source code, you end up usually having better security because white hats will spot errors because they're all looking at it, and you'll lock it down faster. In this case, the white hats aren't doing this because you didn't, you know, release it on purpose. So maybe it got some security vulnerabilities too.
And now if you wanted to be the most profiteering, because although that is certainly a big black eye for Blizzard.
That's the destructive way to go.
That's destructive. Why,
free and wide, everybody. Hack away.
So if he wanted to make some coin on this, though, he doesn't know what Blizzard's going to do. For all he knows, Blizzard's going to be like, what? You got this illegally, and now we're gonna put you in jail for doing that, or we're going to threaten you with some sort of lawsuit.
Right. You said he might ransom Blizzard?
No, I'm asking you. Can he
sell it?
I mean, maybe. I mean, maybe you could sell it. Maybe
I don't know. I don't think it's very lucrative at this point, right? I mean, I guess maybe you could contact a competitor, you know, call up EA. Hey, want to buy the StarCraft source code? But most competitors are not going to want to touch this, right? Because of the legality around it.
Because that would be a problem. If somebody got their hands on it randomly. But I guess that what I'm trying to illustrate here is that unless he wanted to intentionally embarrass...
Oh, I got one for you, though. I got one for you. Because this was in the Reddit thread. A lot of people were saying this. They were saying, what you should do is hand it over to archive.org. And some people mentioned other organizations that are similar. But a lot of people were saying, like, don't give it back to Blizzard, but be altruistic. Give it to an archiving service that responsibly handles these things, because that is a historical object that you have there. And that is the thing that you should do. Don't give it back to Blizzard. Give it to someone who wants to preserve that source code for future generations to look at.
With the idea being that Blizzard can always change exactly what this is based on whatever's in there, but having it be in some kind of digital Smithsonian,
yes,
as it were.
The people have a right to know. It's the history of the internet. And I'm actually very sympathetic to that. I'm a big fan of archive.org and what they do. And so part of me says, gosh, I kind of wish he had done that in the altruistic sense. But it is Blizzard's property, and Blizzard should probably make the decision of whether they want to hand it over to a museum.
To me, that just seems like a mushy middle where you're doing the exact same thing as putting it on Pastebin, except you're fooling yourself into feeling better about your action, right?
Yeah, well, you're making a decision on behalf of someone else, exactly.
Now, meanwhile, let's flip over to Blizzard's side, right? They didn't seem to necessarily throw the goon squad at him. You know, they let him know that it is, hey, we're going to let you know these are trade secrets. There are kind of legal tendrils to that, and there are actionable moves that we could make, but we would just like it back. Guy gave it back. Who knows what happened behind the scenes?
You're walking up to a pit bull. You don't know whether it's a calm one or whether it's going to try to bite your face. You know, Blizzard's just like, hey guy, can you just can you drop, leave it?
Because I think if you're looking at the report card on something like this, which is really fascinating, because in an era where customer service seems more important than ever because of how things can mushroom on social media so quickly, this seems to be Blizzard kind of showing a kind-hearted corporate ethic, right? That this guy had this thing, they got it back. They didn't immediately send him some sort of threatening legal letter that he posted on Reddit immediately. He gave the thing back, and now it's, hey, come on out here, and then maybe they'll call him up on stage during a StarCraft presentation at Blizzard, at BlizzCon or something, or you know, the
and we're announcing we're opening the source code. You wouldn't have had to give it back to us.
Sure. I mean, I guess it's hard to look at companies and say you're doing the right thing when they're so big, because very often we find the remains of a negative situation as opposed to decisions that they say, you know, discretion is the better part of valor here. Mm-hmm. This seems to be on all sides kind of a warm and fuzzy story.
Yeah. I mean, Chemist 49 did the right thing. He talked to his friends on Reddit, the public. He talked to a lawyer, And then after much consideration and due diligence, did what most people consider the ethical thing. And Blizzard is showing profuse thanks for that.
Now, on Blizzard's end, man, you got to wonder who took what home and left that in a box that they sold on eBay, right?
Like, oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those like, all right.
How did that get out?
As soon as they got that CD, right? And I'm sure before that they were doing a little bit of sleuthing on their own just to make sure that this actually did come from a box of stuff on eBay and not somebody just saying, oh my God, what a random, it fell off the back of a truck.
This, yeah, right, right.
Master source code.
Well, and that could explain why they're being so thankful. You know, I don't know what other information Chemist 49 was able to give them. So,
yeah.
Anyway, a StarCraft Samaritan.
Hey,
good Samaritan story.
I know. StarCraft, man. I'll tell you what, blowing up. They're affecting the Korean election. They're making people feel good on Reddit. Good ups, big ups to StarCraft.
In the rear with the gear. Hey, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. A bunch of messages, so we're just going to plow through these, but thank you for sending them to us. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Paul was listening to the May 3rd episode of DTNS when I asked Scott, what do you want in regards to streaming options? Paul says, I really only ever watch local terrestrial TV stations, CBS, NBC, ABC. I wish someone would give me a streaming option for only those stations. Right now I get them for free, but I can't watch CBS if it rains. I would gladly pay for more reliable delivery of those stations. I would probably also purchase streaming to my mobile device as an add-on. I don't think we'll ever see that, though. There are a lot of logistics to having a single source provider of just that service and not as much profit to be made. Yeah, you set up too many caveats there, because you can buy CBS All Access for $7 a month and get your CBS local channels in most cases streamed to you and all the CBS programming. So you could solve your CBS program, but it's not going to get you the other channels if you want to have it all in one place. And for that, you know, it depends on where you live, but some markets will have it for PlayStation View and Sling and Hulu and YouTube, and some won't. But you're not paying for just those. You're paying for all those other stuff too.
I do think, though, that there is the future does lie in more and niche opportunities for over-the-top stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind it being multiple services, NBC is considering doing this for their own programming once the restriction on them doing it from Comcast buying them ends. ABC has been rumored to be thinking about it, too. So you may at some point be able to buy all the major stations a la carte and then just say, well, it's not one service, but at least it gives me what I want.
And I can see a place in the future where, you know, either Apple or Roku or something are, you know, makes a better service in which you can plug all your subscriptions into one mega viewer that can help with stuff like that.
Regarding Resist Bot that we talked about on Monday, we were talking about it, and I mentioned that the bot can attach a physical address to a message so that they know, you know, who you are, can validate that you're a registered voter. And Dave in Orlando wrote in to say, hey, I just wanted to confirm that it actually does that. I actually got a phone call response from my representative inviting me to a town hall she was doing on the topic of one of my faxes during the last congressional recess. So thank you, Dave, for that. Also, thank you for the Go Blues, because Dave is from St. Louis originally.
Hey.
Fred in finally sunny Southwest Wisconsin said, in this time of shifting sources of media consumption, does the DTNS Brain Trust see a place for the local television network affiliated TV station beyond being a lifeline for cord cutters? So actually, this, I should have read this along with the email from Paul earlier. But I think local television affiliates are going to be your local news source and competitors with your local newspaper all on the same platform. We don't have television, newspaper, and radio anymore. It's all internet.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, is he saying like the show, like the 10 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock?
I think what he's saying is, do we need a local CBS affiliate when CBS can just provide programming nationwide? Like, why have an affiliate?
It's a really good question. You know, I do think that as far as news goes, yeah, there's always going to be some kind of source for news. Although, to be fair, over the years, and it just might be the case of being too early, but local news on the internet is something that nobody has really been able to crack. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to move on to Dwayne. Thought you were done. Sorry about that. Dwayne said the Surface laptop that's $999 is for the college student. He has a quote from the Microsoft event. For Surface, this is where we wanted to put our focus into the next 4 years of a student's life when they're just about to get out of high school. So Dwayne says this makes sense. When you go to campuses today, you see MacBooks and other high-end laptops, so $1,000 is not a stretch for the college student.
Is that getting heat for being too...
Well, someone complained about the price of Windows 10S laptops, and I pointed out to them that the price for all the non-Microsoft ones is like $189, $299. So those are cheap. And then we were like, well, which one is the $1,000 one for? Well, it's for the senior in high school, I guess. That
sure.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And listen, Microsoft wants to get in on that premium pricing.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Justin Robert Young. Of course, as always, what you got going on to tell folks about?
Oh, well, Tom, you can join me every single day. That is twitch.tv/JustinRYoung, where I am streaming every day about something, wrestling, politics, your emails, a tech chat with Tom before this very show every Thursday morning. I'm here for you folks, twitch.tv/JustinRYoung.
The internet's broken, my friends, and it needs to be fixed now. Why? I explain it all in my weekly column at patreon.com/DTNS. And if you'd like to read that and a recap of all the top tech news of the week, just back us for $5 a month. It's 25 cents a show at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday. If you want to join us live, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And we're at facebook.com/dailytechnewsshow. Our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Bart Buschatz and Len Peralta. We're going to talk security. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
The internet is broken.
It's broke, son.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well,
Time to fix it.
This is before even that SMS story broke that I wrote that column to. So it's just more fuel for the fire.
God damn. Hey, man, good show.
Yeah, good show. I agree. Good show. What should we call it?
Good show.
I think, hold on, we need to take a look at the old show bit.
Can't hear me.
Yeah,
SS7? Oh, you can? SS7 License to Steal?
Oh, like 007. Really I get it.
Yeah. May the
source be with you.
I kind of love that.
May the fourth.
Out of the park.
Well done.
Source code of ethics. A StarCraft Samaritan.
Source code of ethics is good, too. I like that one, too.
May the fourth be with you. Of apple carts and banned wagons. A blizzard of reward. Blizzard gives a warm thanks.
I think May the Source Be With You is my favorite.
I think that just hits on too many levels.
Too many. All right.
All the levels.
I used to have a bunch of Gold Masters from Tech TV. This game's almost ready to play.
Were they source code, though, or just Gold Masters?
Just Gold Masters. Source code's really rare to find.
Uh-huh.
And generally, depending on what's on it, it may or may not be useful for the average person.
Right.
Because it's not like you can just compile it.
Oh, you know, one thing I left out of the story when I did the retelling, he did play it and stream it.
Oh.
To show really? That it was real.
So he did actually manage to compile it.
Yeah. And a lot of people started advising him, like, you might not want to do that. Like, you're on thin ice.
Unless there was an executable copy of the game already on the disc.
Yeah, maybe that's all he did.
I'm just because sometimes they put out the source code, but they don't include the libraries that they call on,
right,
for whatever they wrote. Because they assume you have it.
Well, maybe he had a copy of StarCraft already that he could use the libraries from. I don't know.
All right. To compile it, probably not.
So let's get to the meat of what's important here. Okay. Roger, when are you going to go see Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't know. I mean, I want to see it, but I honestly don't know. I mean, unless you can find me an awesome babysitter. I mean,
like, you do know that it's Guardians of the Galaxy, like the movie that came out a couple years ago that everybody's like.
Yeah, I liked it. So this is my thing. I was a fan of the comic series before they rebooted it, and I'm a fan of the new one. But it's one of those movies that's really, really fun to watch. But as soon as I get home, it's not like something that stays with me. It's not an impactful movie. Like Lord of the Rings, when I first saw it, it's like, whoa, you're still talking about it like a month later. Like Guardians of the Galaxy is like, that's cool, it's fun, and you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of like, you know, as it is themed, like the super fun a mixtape, right? Yes. Like gives you a good feeling. Yeah, make
it's
a pep in your step.
Yeah, it's like it's very interesting because compared to most of the Disney Marvel lineups, it's not that weighty. There's gravitas because, you know, the end of the world or the universe, but really it's like one huge heist slash, you know, humor, funny.
It is a lot like Pirates. Like when the first Pirates of the Caribbean came out, although that movie was long and they only got longer past that, but like the idea of it just being like, yeah, I mean, who really remembers who's got the golden doubloons, and is it Barbossa or is it Captain Jack? You just want some pirates to swashbuckle a little, and then they poke somebody off the plane.
Yeah, and you like hearing Johnny Depp or Captain Jack Sparrow Sparrow say something incredibly witty or clever or just, you know, whimsical, but just funny, right? Because you enjoy that. But you don't go home and start like, I'm gonna turn our master bedroom into like the you know, the ship of, or whatever, the ship, the Black Pearl. You know, it's not something that impacts you in that way, but it's a fun movie.
By the way, the new Pirates, which we own in the movie draft, is tracking for a $90 million opening.
Not bad.
Wow.
Not bad. Well, you have Guardians, Pirates, and one other small one, right?
Girls Trip. Can't get an infection in your booty hole, Tom.
Ah, how could I forget?
Wait, what movie is that? I'm totally out of it. What movie?
Girls Trip is a comedy about a bunch of African-American women of a certain age that have reunited from their wild past and now go on a little girls trip to let loose. Some of them are buttoned up and other of them are still wild, but had a funny trailer and we're going to hope that it does well. We're kind of screwed though. We really need a massive, massive overperformance by Guardians, and like, I'm seeing excitement for it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is like world shaking.
It's not getting the buzz that it did the first time around. And we mentioned this before, but the first time around it was a surprise, right? Like,
yes.
Wow, how good is that? This time around, there are high expectations for it.
But, you know, that movie created Chris Pratt as a star, right?
It definitely vaulted him from that guy on Parks and Rec to a movie star. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's a star. He was an actor people liked. Yeah. Nobody was like, oh, let's go see her because Chris Pratt plays a supporting role.
No,
right?
I remember people going, really? The fat guy from Parks and Rec? Which I never thought he was that fat, but I heard several different people say that.
Yeah.
Totally worked out and he totally got ripped and now, now he's Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt on as a Marvel. It's kind of the same thing with what's his name doing Ant-Man. Paul Rudd. Like, you don't, I mean, he still plays kind of the Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd feels like the kind of typical I'm a comic actor that does a comic action movie kind of guy, in a way that Chris Pratt hadn't really even done the like comic movie that centered around him. You know, there's been plenty of movies that have centered around Paul Rudd as like the funny guy. Like, Pratt really hadn't had that.
I definitely want to see Aliens Covenant. But I don't think I'll be able to catch that in the theater either.
You know, that's an interesting one because, like, I really don't know. I'm also just realizing that Frogpants bought every movie that comes out.
Uh-huh. I noticed
May 12th and May 19th.
Yeah.
Two whole weeks.
It's like the mid-May block, Frogpants block, rock block.
It's there's something about the Aliens lore universe that's really...
Well, now, does your wife want to see it?
Jen, she said it looks cool, but it's she's not like...
Okay, because my suggestion is and I come visit. Eileen and Jen hang out with Ellie, and we go see a movie, or vice versa.
Yeah.
But it has to be a movie that those two don't care about, and we do.
Does Eileen not care about Aliens?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her. She doesn't like horror movies, but it's not exactly a horror movie. So,
you know, it's
like it seems like that they are leaning like the, at least the marketing materials seems to be kind of a reaction to Prometheus, where it's like this is not just a meditation on life. This is a horror movie. Look at all these people that are going to die. Things are going to pop out.
Look how scared they look. It's going to be exciting.
I liked. This is the thing that bugged me about Prometheus. I just really wanted it to bridge a lot of the backstory, but it just left a lot more questions, I guess, scratching your head. Also, I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I think it kind of bears the hallmarks of some of the lesser writing of Damon Lindelof, who wrote had an impact on the script, in that the mystery is kind of more important than the story.
Yeah.
And so they that was like, this is can't miss. It's Ridley Scott returning to Aliens. Like, we're going to do this thing. And so we'll set up this part one, but just wait until part two when you find all this other stuff out. And everybody was like, part one was boring.
Yes. Like, it did not keep me interested enough in part two.
I was like, when does the other bit come? I was like sitting through the movie. It's like, where's the reveal? Where's the whatever? And it's like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Aliens flying around in flying horseshoes, creating bioweapon alien thingies.
It's the problem with prequels. They're hard.
They are. Especially if the expansive universe continued after the original movies were done. Like Star Wars, like the expanded universe.
Was there an expanded Aliens universe?
Dark Horse has, for the longest time, had
A
huge license to do continuation stories based off Star Wars, Aliens, Predators. And that's where you first saw the Aliens versus Predators, as well as Aliens versus Superman, Alien versus Batman, Predator versus Batman. I mean, there was just a lot of people wanted to see, like, ooh, what if we cross over? I think they also did RoboCop versus Terminator.
The Daily Technique.
And they tried to backfill that story Blizzard, where I think the technology created
Doctor Who build, versus Star Trek.
They did one of those.
Yep.
They did one with that was DC. Wildstorm did one where Batman or Planetary, kind of like the Authority comic book, group of like superhero archaeologists go through all the multiverse and encounter all the various incarnations of Batman, like the Adam West Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman, Frank Knight Batman. There was one, there was the guy who wrote Independence Day, or one of them, one of the writers, wrote a short treatment comic for a movie he wanted to do called Aliens versus Dinosaurs. And the dinosaurs are pictured as having a very kind of, although still primitive, very advanced hierarchical society. They had traditions, they had rituals, religious rituals and stuff, and the aliens come and they have to fight them off. Would have been cool as a movie. There wouldn't be that many humans, if any, in it, which might be a big no-no.
That was, Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich wrote it, Independence Day. But, yeah, they were hot as hell back in the 90s.
And then they did Godzilla, and everyone was like, what? Why does Godzilla look like my pet iguana?
And also, why does he get kind of small enough to swim through the sewers? And
yeah, and they're big enough to crush a building. It was just really weird.
Why is Matthew Broderick in it? And Man, I could not be more excited for a movie than I was for Godzilla.
I think everyone was just like, whoa, this is going to be awesome.
I was of that age, man. I was in my, we all used to hang out because I was a super cool dude, ladies and gentlemen. We used to hang out in our favorite science teacher's class after school, and we were looking up trailers, and we were so excited for Godzilla. And I remember the week before it came out, because they kept the look of Godzilla a secret the entire time. And we wound up going to like the Taco Bell website or something.
So you're talking about like the 98 Godzilla.
98 Godzilla.
Gotcha. Dude. Okay. You freaked me out there when you said you were in science class. So I was thinking of the 2014 one.
No. I was going to make a gross joke. Anywho, we went to a Taco Bell website. It loaded in a crisp 30 minutes and because they had some new trailer or something. And they showed the actual, like, they had like a promo image of Godzilla from the movie. And I was like, it was the first time I remember just talking myself into something.
Uh-huh.
Just, oh,
well, it'll be good.
It'll still be good. Spoiler alert. It wasn't good.
I never saw it. Yeah, I saw the 2014 one, but.
Was there any other movie after that? I can't remember any other Matthew Broderick movie after that movie.
The Producers.
Didn't that come? Oh. Did that come after? Or maybe it did.
I think it did.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No. All right. So here, let's see. You want the Matthew Broderick after he played Dr. Nico Timotopoulos?
Yes.
In there. All right. Well, let's take a look here. By the way, I guess he was a pretty working actor. Let's go. 98. Wait, what was it? Was it 97 or 98? Godzilla. Godzilla 98. All right. That same year, or sorry, the next year, he does Election.
Okay.
Inspector Gadget also comes out in 99. Yeah.
Didn't realize
that was another actor. Terrible movie.
Terrible movie.
Yeah.
He does the TV version of The Music Man.
Don't remember that.
The Stepford Wives remake.
Oh.
I vaguely remember that.
2004. And that pretty much leads right into the movie version of The Producers in 2005. So he was doing The Producers in like...
Yeah.
2003 is when the Broadway version came out.
Modern Family.
Well, and he does a lot of Broadway stuff still. So did he do anything after The Producers?
Producers. Movie. A lot of voice work.
Easier. Well, he had kids with... what's her face from Sex and the City?
Sarah Jessica Parker.
SJP.
Yeah, Power Heist. That was supposed to be the big comeback movie for Eddie Murphy and Brett Ratner. And then other than that,
he's
a lot
Manchester
of...
Manchester by the Sea? I didn't know that.
Oh, he's Jeffrey. Rules Don't Apply. Look Away. Amusement. Oh, he's filming Amusement Park as a voice.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for hanging out with us. Hope you had a good time. We did. I did.
Oh, always a blast.
Yeah. And we will speak to you again tomorrow.
Adios.
From this very seat. Thanks again, patrons. Goodbye.